First committee will please come to order. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody, and hopefully happy Valentine's Day. Two bills are going to be considering. This morning we have with us Representative Peterson on the left, Representative Greenberg, Representative Johansson, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Wes Keller, Representative Keller, and our trusted staff is here with us. We plan to hear this morning HB 190. That's PFD allowable absences and HJR 33 on amending the U.S. Constitution regarding campaign money. And if possible, I'd like to move both of these bills out today. The first bill we've had, I think this is the fourth hearing going on, not anybody's fault, it's just the way it's, you know, the calendar we have. So I'd like to have the presenter for HB 190 come forward, please. I'll present her. Okay, please introduce yourself and give a very brief recap on the bill, mainly for our millions in the viewing audience.
Good morning. Mike Pascal, I'm Office Representative Eric Feige, and House Bill 190 addresses the issue of allowing different groups of people to be absent from the state for a longer period of time. Specifically, the legislature previously put in place a 10-year rule as a drop-dead provision for the PFD, with the exception of members of Congress and their staff. And our concern was that, in particular, members of the military are not allowed to continue to receive the PFD when other individuals that are serving the state and the country are. So that's how we got to the point we are. Wasn't the original route we were desiring to take in terms of the current legislation, but to address constitutional and legal issues, this was the legislation that we ended up with that we believe effectively addresses what our concern was, excuse me, as well as also addresses the need to limit as well as possible the number of PFDs that are given out under allowable absences over an extended period of time. So by placing in statute the restrictions that the department or the division has developed over time and been using, makes these a stronger set of provisions for evaluating allowable absences beyond the original 5 years, which was what was set up as a kind of a blanket 5 years. There's not a qualifying period during the first 5 years, but after 5 years you have to qualify in a more detailed way to continue to receive the PFD.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Representative Seaton has joined us. And I have before me a thing from Representative Feige, the sponsor of the bill, additional documents. I assume everybody has this.
Yeah.
Okay. And 1 second, did you have a question?
I see we have
Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have somebody from law and PFD. Are the folks from law and PFD?
I have available, I don't know, for questions only, I have a, look like Mike Barber and Debbie Bitney. Are you folks in the room? We've got to hold up your hand. Did you have a question for us?
Yes.
Whoever held up their hand back there, would you please come forward?
I can ask the question first.
Do it.
This bill does not go to judiciary, and I'm fond of asking a similar question, on particularly on bills that don't go to judiciary. Are you aware of any problems, legal problems with the bill? Have you received any legal memoranda in connection with this bill?
Not in the current version. As we redid this, there were some questions from legal, and we addressed all those questions through legal and changed the bill appropriately to the version that you have in front of you.
So, through the chair. So, to your knowledge, legal has no legal or constitutional problems with this?
That is correct.
Okay, I'm going to ask the other questions.
Yeah, let's ask. Let's go directly to horse's mouth, as it were. No insult intended. Mr. Barber, are you there? Or whoever wants to come up? Good morning, folks. Please introduce yourselves, and whoever wants to go first, do it.
I'm Debbie Bitney, the director with the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, and with me is Mike Barber, Department of Law.
Okay, who would like, why don't you repose the question to them, Representative Renberg?
Certainly. And you can make this part of your presentation or whatever. I'd just like you both to address whether you're aware of any legal or constitutional problems with this piece of legislation.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I'm not aware of any constitutional or legal problems.
You have to identify yourself.
Oh, excuse me. Michael Barber, Assistant Attorney General. I'm not aware of any.
Yeah, I know. I'll move the microphone closer.
I'm not aware of any constitutional or legal problems with the bill as it's currently written.
Representative Grunberg, does that satisfy you?
Does.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we have the permanent fund up here at this time, I'd like to ask a question. If we had an amendment to retain the 10-year limit added onto this bill so that the 5-year became in statute, but there was still the 10-year limit, does that give you any enforcement problems?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, no, that does not give us any issues at all.
Okay, and Mr. Chair.
And that was Debbie Bentley, yes. Continue.
Also, would there be any legal or enforcement problems if we extended that 10-year maximum to congressional staff as well? Not congressmen or members of Congress, but to congressional staff.
Excuse me, to congressional staff?
To congressional staff.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, to my knowledge, we have never actually had congressional staff out that long and have never run into that deadline. So, no, I mean, it doesn't cause us any problems whatsoever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any Representative Wilson and then Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell me, before, because it was just a little vague, we would have constituents say, well, I think I did, and they said I didn't. Does this help you draw the line in the sand a little easier so that people understand it a little bit better?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this legislation does make the rules a little less subjective and more clear to the public about what we're going to be looking at. Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, this is to both of you. Do you have a copy of the R. Romeo version, proposed CS?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like you to turn your attention to page 3, line 17. The word documentation. I would think that may be more limiting than you would wish, particularly if you were to have a hearing or something like that. How would you feel about changing the word documentation to proof?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't have any issues with that change.
That would give you a little more discretion.
We know the common use of the word proof, of course, but what is proof? Is there a legal definition for proof?
A proof is anything that tends to prove a fact. And proof can be, it can be a document, it could be a photograph, although that might be considered a document, but mainly it could be testimony, oral testimony under oath.
So it expands it.
Yeah, normally in most statutes and discussions of the evidence, types of evidence that may be considered when you're talking about beyond clear and convincing evidence, it's proof beyond a clear and convincing evidence. And I just think the department would be well advised to be able to use any proof. And I would ask through the chair whether the two witnesses would agree with that.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't see any problems with that at all.
And from the legal chair, people?
Representative Grunberg, I don't see any issues with that. This is referring to an initial eligibility determination by the department. So typically what what they receive with the application is documentation, if I'm correct. And oaths are taken if there's a dispute and it goes to an administrative hearing. So I think that proof would be just fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
At the proper time, I'll entertain an amendment. I believe Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, Debbie, if you could tell me what way you go about verifying some of this documentation or the proof that they're providing. Obviously, you don't have a team of investigators to go out and figure out for sure whether all this information is factual. What's your procedure you use?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, we require travel documents. We also have access to various databases throughout the state, voting records, registration. We ask for, evidence, payroll records in the case of military, showing that their declaration is still Alaska. We have, and we do take testimony from the applicants as well. I mean, we talk to them, and we do accept their word for certain things. So quite a bit of different ways that we do collect information.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee? Okay. Is there anybody online who would like to testify on this bill? Anybody in the audience who would like to testify on the bill? Any comments from the prime sponsor of the bill, Representative Feige?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Eric Feige, Representative for District 12.
You've been here so often, it's almost like you're part of the committee.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman.
But you don't get to vote on it.
That's okay. I think before we do conduct the vote on this particular bill, I'd like to just take everybody back to the original purpose for this bill. We've gone through a number of gyrations trying to comply with the legalities and the constitutionality and try not to establish new classes of individuals and all that, but the original purpose of this bill was so that an Alaskan resident could enlist or join the military, serve his country or her country, and do a full 20-year career intent upon returning to the state, retire, come back to Alaska, and not be denied a permanent fund for the time that they were serving their country.
I have one question. One can retire from the military after 20 years. Many people stay for 30 years, full career retirement, 20 years. But that's a subject for later discussion.
That's true. They can stay as long as their bodies can hold up. I have several classmates that are approaching that 30-year mark and will be retiring next year. But those numbers are few and far between. We're not talking about folks the number of people that go for that long in service and are willing to keep up with the fulfilling the requirements in the statute for the intent to return, that the bar we have set fairly high. We've given more more emphasis behind it by taking it out of regulations and putting into the statutes to back up the folks at the Permanent Fund Division to allow them to very clearly define to people what those standards are and what they need to do to satisfy the proof of whether or not they're going to come back as a resident. So, again, going back to the original intent of the bill, it's so Alaskans can go out and serve their country, something we need them to do, and return while maintaining the full privileges of being an Alaskan resident.
Thank you. Any questions for the prime sponsor? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like the members to turn their attention, please, to page 3, line 23.
Page 3, line 23.
This is all in the RS and Romeo version, which we've adopted. The department shall consider. I assume that you mean, I mean, that's, that phrase has some legal ambiguity, because it may mean one of two things. It may mean those are the only factors that may be considered, as is an exclusive list, or it may mean that the factors the department shall consider shall include but not be limited to the listed factors. And I hate ambiguity in statutes. I think we need to draft them so everybody knows what they mean. Which of those two is the sponsor's intent?
And I wish we'd ask the Department of Law when they're up here.
First, I'd like to get his intent, that we can call my partner.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, shall but not be limited to would certainly be reasonable.
Then I think if that's the intent, at the appropriate time, I'll consider a conceptual amendment that would say something to the effect, the factors the department shall consider should include the following.
Sure.
Because the word include is defined in Title I as including but not limited to. And if I were to offer that type of an amendment, would that be acceptable to you?
That would be acceptable, Representative Grunberg. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. I'd like to have the Department of Law come back up, please. Please introduce yourself again, and could you respond to Representative Grunberg's latest potential amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mike Barber, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law. I believe the question was,
Would you repeat the question, Representative Grunberg?
Of course. Page 3, line 23. The phrase shall consider, I think, is ambiguous. And the question is, are those the exclusive factors, or should the factors include those factors but not be limited to those? And the prime sponsor, Representative Feige, wants the latter interpretation. So,
because he said he preferred the latter, or he was comfortable with the latter.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the language including, I think, would take care of exactly what you're looking
you
for.
You don't see any problem.
Okay. No.
Thank you very much. Is there nobody else to testify on? I'm going to close public testimony. I'll entertain amendments at this time to HB 190.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
I'd offer a conceptual amendment, page 3, line 23. The conceptual amendment would be at the end of the line, adding the phrase shall include. So the line would say, state indefinitely, comma, the court, the factor, I'm sorry, it should be the factors the department shall consider shall include. So before the department, we would say the factors the department shall consider shall include. And that's a conceptual amendment.
Is there any objection to, that's amendment number one, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Without objection, amendment number one passes. Do I hear another amendment? Going once, going twice. Representative Grunberg.
Change on page 3, line 17, changing the word documentation to the word proof, and another type of evidence that would be included would be such things that would be a deposition or something like that. That is recorded oral testimony.
But the conceptual amendment, would you repeat the conceptual amendment, please?
Yes, sir. Page 3, line 17, delete documentation, insert proof.
Okay. Without objection, amendment number 2 passes. Are there any further amendments? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment to retain the current 10-year limit.
Well, where are you?
That would be on page 3 under section 1 at probably after 12.
Object for discussion.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I believe, and I'd have to look it up, that would also involve on page 4, line 15, deleting section 3, because my recollection is that is the statute that contains the 10-year limitation. If we could just wait a second, I'll find that statute. I looked it up the last time we took up this bill. AS 4323008C. Let me read that into the record here just so. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. It's going to take a second here. Okay, here we go. Okay, this is the, may I read this
section? Yes.
It's brief. AS 4323008C, quote, an otherwise eligible individual who has been eligible for the immediately preceding 10 dividends, despite being absent from the state for more than 180 days in each of the related 10 qualifying years, is only eligible for the current year dividend if the individual was absent 180 days or less during the qualifying year. This subsection does not apply to an absence under A9 or 10 of this section, or to an absence under A13 of this section, if the absence is to accompany an individual who is absent under A9 or A10 of this section. And A...
In other words, you like military.
I think so. Yep. Serving as a member of Congress is A9. Serving on the staff of a member of Congress is A10. And A13 is accompanying another eligible resident. And I'm not sure how that repealer figures in, but I think that that should be considered whether or not that's part of this.
Representative Seaton, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's why it's a conceptual amendment, so that we would...
So the amendment, would you... Yes, I know. Would you tell us again what the amendment is, or proposed amendment is?
The proposed amendment would be to retain the current 10-year limit and then expand that 10-year limit to include Section A13, which is congressional staff.
So in other words, not only the congressperson, but their staff.
Excuse me, that was A10 was congressional staff. No, the congressperson elected by the citizens of the state and sent to Washington, D.C. would be exempt. But the congressional staff who have made a career choice and have decided to go to work outside would be under the 10-year limit just like anyone else.
Okay, so the congressperson, whoever that is, they have the exception.
That's correct.
But those who choose, who are not elected, but choose to work as part of their staff, it's just like anybody else goes outside to work someplace.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. This amendment would say that if you make a choice to leave Alaska, or if you're a dependent of someone who has chosen to leave Alaska and be absent, or an allowable absence, for over 10 years, then you don't continue receiving that dividend.
So this would tend to limit?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Peterson, proposed amendment, I mean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know. I actually think that I would like to retain the ability for the staff to continue getting the dividend because, yes, they are making a career decision, but they're in Washington working for the state of Alaska and doing hopefully good things for the state of Alaska, and I would hate to see them lose, I guess you could call it their Alaska residency or Alaska citizenship, while they're actually out there working hard to try to do good things for the people of this state.
Do you have any idea, anybody, how many people we're talking about? since I'm not running for Congress yet, I don't, how many staff do they have?
Mr. Chairman, the testimony that we had from the Permanent Fund Division was no congressional staff that they're aware of has ever been out for over 10 years receiving permanent fund dividends. And just a clarification, there's nothing in this amendment that would make someone lose their Alaska residency, because you can maintain your Alaska residency. The question is, if you're absent forever over 10 years, do you still maintain an allowable absence to receive a permanent fund dividend? And also, Mr. Chairman, it's not just congressional staff that service Alaska. We have trade representatives, and we have other people that are working for the administration in other areas that are not, you know, physically here, but they don't have this exemption.
You have members of the Foreign Service and so on.
And I don't believe that congressional staff, if they make that choice that they want to be in Washington, D.C. for over 10 years as a career choice, that they should be receiving a special exemption.
Okay. Then, first of all, is there an objection to
yes.
that? Object for discussion?
Yes.
And let's make some decisions here. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the appropriate time, it may be advisable, if the body wants to divide the question, because we're talking about military.
I would consider this to be, if we do this, it'd be a separate amendment.
The reason is, I was Ted Stevens' legislative assistant, and I was there for 2 years. But the term staff of a member of Congress is a technical term. And when members of Congress, including the Senate, have staff, most of the time they get to be senior, and they're not staff of the senator or the representative, their committee staff. And I don't know, under the Department of Revenue's interpretation, whether the phrase staff of a member of Congress would include the staff whom the member has, but they're technically paid by the committee. And I'm wondering if, when we take this up, if Ms. Bitney could answer that question. And that may partly, at least, answer the question, because I believe, like Wayne Schley, who was on staff when I was there, served for many, many years as staff of the Senate Post Office and Civil Service Committee. And I don't know whether Wayne would have, like, qualified. And maybe we need to ask that question.
So, now we already, this would be, what you're talking about would be, should it pass, would be amendment number 3, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Do we need to talk to somebody out here?
I'd like Ms. Bitney to come up. Just to answer that question.
Yes, and then we're going to move ahead.
We should talk to the sponsor.
Yes. Ms. Bitney, identify yourself.
Debbie Bitney, director of PFD. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we request a list from the congressmen and women, and they provide a list to us of their staff, but what their criteria is for providing that list, I am not aware, and I will have to do some research to find out.
Through the chair, I think that they're very sensitive on that, because, like, Senator Murkowski, as the ranking Republican on the Energy Committee, appoints staff members, but they're paid by the committee. They're appointed by her, but they're members of this committee's staff. And I mean, at some point, depending upon what happens with this, and maybe in any event, it would be wise to make that inquiry, because the people who get those positions are usually senior people, and oftentimes their career.
It's a great idea. I absolutely will do this.
Okay. Do you withdraw your objection?
To the amendment?
Yeah.
That's like to inquire. So,
did you move the amendment?
I did. If I may. So this would eliminate it for everybody, including the members of Congress and their staff. No.
Please restate your proposed amendment.
Conceptual
amendment. Number 3.
Number 3, retaining the 10-year limit on allowable absences and expanding that to include congressional staff in that limit. So it does not include congressmen, but it does include staff.
Representative Grunberg.
I would ask that, that the question be divided. The question is, should we retain the 10-year? That should be one question. And then secondly, should it be expanded to include congressional staff? I think that's divisible, and I'd like it divisible.
Any comment about staff, rest of the committee? Do you have any objection from Representative Wilson?
I would like to know what that will do.
What is it?
I mean, as far as the department is, you know, what is that going to do? Is that going to add more, take away some? What is it going to do?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is exactly what they're doing right now. They have a 10-year limit. And so that you can be away on allowable absences for 10 years, but after 10 years, that's the end. You can't maintain and take a 30-year career and get permanent fund dividends for the entire time. So the question is then, are we going to retain that portion of the system that we currently have? And then there's one exception that is there, which is a choice. It's not elected officials that are sent. It's a choice by individuals to take a career as a congressional staffer. And so I personally feel that when people make choices to leave Alaska for an extended period of time, that's one of the things that they take on. I mean, the difference between congressional staff and Congress people are that we elect and we send to Congress, the Congress people. Congressional staff are there. Ms. Bitney testified.
Voluntary employees
on their own personal career. And Ms. Bitney had testified that they have not had anyone actually utilize the congressional 10-year staff special exemption. And so I think it sends a consistent message that if you are voluntarily taking a career choice, not sent by the people of Alaska, but your own personal career choice, then you know what those situations are, and you're just like everybody else that fits into any other category of allowable exemption, and there's a 10-year limit on that.
Do you see any need to divide the question?
I don't.
Reverend Grunberg, we have another bill we want to hear here.
I'm sorry, I'll yield.
I beg your pardon. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not finished because. So does that take out this 5 preceding qualifying years, or does that still leave that in?
Mr. Chairman, the bill would incorporate the 5-year provisions that are done in regulations in statute now, so that would stay in.
Okay.
Reverend Johansson.
Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion to divide the question.
Okay. Without objection? Okay, your question is divided.
May I?
Go ahead and speak to it.
Well, I think there are two separate things. I think we should vote on the 10-year, and I think the congressional issue is completely separate, and I don't feel comfortable lumping them together, and it should be a very simple.
Okay. Let's make that then. Amendment 3 and Amendment 4. So why don't you withdraw the amendment that you had proposed and we make a new Amendment number 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd withdraw Amendment number 3.
Objection? You have another amendment?
And do you want this to be
a new Amendment 3? Make this Amendment 4.
Amendment number 4 would be a conceptual amendment retaining the current 10-year limit on allowable absence.
Okay. Any objection? Amendment number 4 passes. Do you have another amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd offer conceptual amendment number 5, and that would be to extend the 10-year limit on allowable absences to receive a permanent fund dividend to congressional staff.
Okay. I object.
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, and having had that particular background, I feel strongly that these people, like the Congress people, are serving our state, often at great expense financially to their career. I made about $16,000 a year as an attorney back there. If my grandmother hadn't left me a small inheritance, we would have foundered, my little family and I. And it was great experience, but it's not the kind of thing that it's a real sacrifice sometimes. And also, I think that we have fairly junior senators now, and they may not have gotten to the point where they have the career. The people have been there, not been there long enough necessarily to take advantage of this, and they're probably committee staff. So I would hope that we retain this long-standing exemption for them, and I oppose the amendment.
So are you speaking for or against?
Against the amendment.
Against the amendment. Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And because of Alaska's geographical location, a long distance away from Washington, where our congressional staff and Congress people are required to do their jobs, I don't think that these staff people should be punished because Alaska doesn't happen to be situated in where Maryland or Virginia is, where if we were geographically close to Washington, they could live in their home state of residence and drive into work every day like many people do. Some people take the train into work every day. So I don't think we should be punishing these people just because Alaska happens to be a long distance away from Washington and it's not practical for them to travel back and forth to work every day.
Okay, do you maintain your objection, Representative Grunberg?
I do.
Okay, call the roll.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Johansson?
No.
Representative P. Wilson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Keller?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg?
No.
Chair Lynn?
No.
2 yay, 5 nay.
Okay. That amendment fails. Representative Keller, do you have?
I'd like to move House Bill. Oh, wrong bill.
It might be a better bill.
Yeah. dear, where are we? HB
93?
190. There we go. HB 190, version 27, LS 1231, Bravo, as amended with individual.
R.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Version LS 0564, Romeo, as amended, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Any objections? Well, we moved the probably, well, maybe we could have moved a different bill, not even before the committee.
No, that would have been a big mistake.
Okay. Thank you very much, you and your sponsor, for bringing the bill to us. We'll take a short of these while we do the paperwork, and then ask Representative Gary to come forward, be prepared to... Next on the agenda this morning is House Joint Resolution number 33, sponsored by Representative Guerra, co-sponsored by Representatives Tuck and Holmes. And this is a resolution urging U.S. Congress, the President, to work to amend the Constitution of the United States. We're joined by the primary sponsor bill, Representative Les Guerra. Please, I've already put your name on the record. Please make your comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Les Guerra, District 23. This resolution is in response to, a series of Supreme Court decisions, but most recently the Citizens United decision. When we run for office, we try and run on our ideas, and we run on our work ethic. And elections should be decided based on ideas, on how hard somebody works. But since the Citizens United decision passed, elections have been influenced more and more by outside money. Under Citizens United, which affects independent expenditures, and let's just take a second to talk about what independent expenditures are, that's money that's supposedly not coordinated with a candidate, but is spent for or against a candidate. So, and not to pick on one party or the other, because both parties are going to use this money. And but in the Republican primary right now, what you see is for, let's say, the Newt Gingrich campaign, He got a big infusion from this gentleman by the name of Sheldon Adelson. That was $5 million. You'll see the same thing from folks like George Soros on the Democratic side. You'll see unlimited expenditures going in from the Sierra Club to the Sierra Club and from the Sierra Club, from corporations. And they're going to advocate to defeat or elect certain candidates. And it used to be that there were limits on what we spent in campaigns. But from 2006, just comparing two non-presidential years.
What we spend on campaigns or the contributions we get?
Well, the contributions we get, and there were severe, in most states, severe limitations on independent expenditures. But now it's wide open. Now it's unlimited, according to the most recent Supreme Court decision. Unlimited independent expenditures from corporations are allowed. Unlimited independent expenditures from unions are allowed. Unlimited political expenditures from outside groups, maybe the Sierra Club, maybe whatever, are allowed. And then unlimited independent expenditures from individuals are allowed. And so what this resolution says is that we're trying to get a number of states to pass resolutions for Congress to hear the public's voice that we would like a constitutional amendment, that places a limit on this outside money. We want ideas to win elections. We want, in the local elections, people's ability to speak to their constituents and convince their constituents that they're a better candidate to win elections. Independent expenditures, since they don't come from the candidate, tend to be negative. The bulk of them are negative. The amount of money spent on independent expenditures between 2006 and 2010 went from $37 million to $210 million.
So let me get this straight. If I'm running for re-election, or any of us running for re-election, there's a limit of what an individual may contribute to my campaign.
Right.
There's a limit to what a PAC might contribute to my campaign, but there's no limit to what one of these, I guess, for lack of a better term, super PACs can.
Right.
No limit whatsoever.
And the way that worked, right, and under Citizens United, George Soros or Exxon or some pro-environmentalist or anti-environmentalist can kick in
millions.
$10 million, $100 million, not in our campaigns. They'll just have to kick in a couple $100,000 to get rid of any of us. And they'll call themselves, People for the American Way, and they'll take out negative ads. In our state, we're a little bit protected in state elections because we passed our disclosure law a couple of years ago.
Yes, we do have a disclosure law. A bill we passed requires, I believe it's the top three, people who contribute to one of these, I guess we call it super PAC, is that correct?
Yeah.
So at least we know who these people are. We're not totally flying blind.
Right.
So, in other words, any one of us could campaign for this office or any other office and be, quote, a good candidate, run a superb campaign, everything we do, knock on all the doors, get campaign contributions from individuals and from PACs that would be typical for the kind of campaign we're running, and our opponents could do the same. And somebody come in and drop $1 million. Not that they would on it, but they could drop $1 million for or against any one of us, and no matter how good one's campaign might be, it's pretty much all over at that point, at least at this state level.
That's true. And then, more importantly, we're represented by people in Congress, and those bigger decisions are decided in Congress where they don't have even the disclosure law that we have here. So in the presidential elections, and we all care about who gets elected president, and in the congressional elections, and we only have three congressional representatives, but we're vastly outnumbered by the non-Alaskan congressional representatives who get to decide Alaska's fate many times. When we let people influence those elections with unlimited money, the money decides who wins the elections. I just have to go back to the idea should decide who wins the elections. The work ethic should decide who wins the elections. The candidate's ability to be appealing enough to draw in campaign contributions should win the elections, though the ideas should rank first. But the ideas are slowly starting to rank last, and the money is starting to rank first.
Now, as I understand it, you're the attorney, I'm not, but as I understand it, most of us know that corporate, you know, we are persons here, and corporations are persons, but they're legal persons, almost fictitious persons, if you will. They're legal persons. But this states, as I understand it, United Citizens says they are persons in the same sense the rest of us are, and so they have had freedom of speech, and they can contribute whatever they want, yet that natural persons cannot. Is that correct?
For unlimited expenditures, for independent expenditures, individuals, corporations now, unions now, environmental groups now can make unlimited amounts of independent expenditures. So in this area of law where you create this group that's trying to influence an election, but they're not connected to the candidate, all of those groups can make unlimited expenditures now, from individuals to corporations to unions to environmental groups to other interest groups.
Is that because the court defines them as persons in the same category as natural persons or a separate category or what?
For the groups, it's because the court now considers all those groups persons, and then for individuals, the court has said you can't stop an individual from spending as much money as they want on an election. So that's the George Soroses and the Sheldon Adelsons and those folks.
Okay. I want to go to Representative Kelly. First, I want to add again. So the purpose of this resolution is to?
It's to send a voice to Congress, and hopefully the other states will send the voice to Congress, and we'll be in touch with the majority and minority leaders in the other states, too. But there is a move to pressure Congress to pass a constitutional amendment to do something to limit the impact of money on elections. Our resolution says put some limits on the ability of contribution limits on independent expenditures. If all 50 states have some different idea on how they should limit the amount of money, it'll still send the message to Congress that the amount of money has gone out of control. Like I said, independent expenditures have gone up sevenfold between 2006 and 2010, up to $210 million in the last non-presidential election. In this presidential election, the numbers will be even higher, because in presidential elections, independent expenditures are much higher.
Expensive money. Representative Keller.
I think you answered the question, but I was going to ask what level of wealth a person would have before you would restrict his or her freedom of speech. But you're saying, I think, that this is to put a limit on what every individual. So I'm going to ask a different question. Before this decision, was there any limits on individual contributions? Because I seem to remember some huge contributions before this by individuals. Specifically, you mentioned George Soros, I think.
Right.
That he won.
Before Citizens United, corporations in most states, or at least in Alaska and many states, were not allowed to donate. Unions had limits. But before Citizens United, in this area of independent expenditures, there was an earlier case called Buckley v. Vallejo that ruled that very wealthy individuals could also make unlimited contributions for independent expenditures. And so we ask in this resolution that that be limited also. Ideas should not be flooded out by money. Most people who participate in the electoral process vote. They might volunteer. They might donate $25, and they just get drowned by these millions of dollars that come in from whether it's very wealthy individuals who feel like they should have more of a voice in the political system, very wealthy corporations who feel like they should have more of a voice in the political system, very wealthy environmental groups or other interest groups who feel like they should have more of a voice in the political system. At some point, people should have their voice in the political system, not outside groups and corporations and those with huge amounts of money.
Another question, Representative Gere. Did the decision do anything to the disclosure requirements? I don't believe it did. I think the Supreme Court decision didn't do anything to change the requirements for people to disclose who they're giving to, who they are that are giving the money.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Keller, I think on the federal level the disclosure requirements are weak, but they're allowed to be stronger were Congress to do it. The Supreme Court said you could have disclosure requirements. Congress actually almost passed a law like we did here in Alaska that says the top three contributors in these independent expenditures have to reveal their names, whether they're a corporation or a person. That failed by one vote.
Yeah. The question was whether or not the decision change anything with disclosure. I think that was all left out completely out of the decision.
There was a part of the decision that said the government can still require disclosures. They didn't define what level.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So really what we're looking at is two different things. One, we're looking at the right of free speech. And another, we're looking at just putting a limit on the money. Now, in the state of Alaska, we have made that rules to handle that. So my question is to you, there's lots of different ways to tackle what your concern is. And it's very complicated, very involved, and very hard to understand all the nuances that are happening. The very fact that you say you're going to write all the minority leaders across the
majority and minority.
You didn't say that, though.
Oh, I meant to. Sorry.
You didn't say that. And so.
Go pay attention to what he says, pay attention to what he means.
But what I'm getting at is there's lots of different ways to correct the problem that you're concerned about, and why not contact all the other states and have them do what the state of Alaska has done? It would be much easier to do, and we wouldn't get into changing, happen to put a new amendment in Congress. And so, I think this is a poor solution to a very complex problem, and there's lots of ways that it can be done without going to Congress and saying, open up the Constitution and making a change.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the only thing that we can do is disclosure, but we can't stop the unlimited flood of money that comes into the political system. That's what this resolution aims at. The Citizens United opinion said you can have disclosure, but you can't stop George Soros or the Sierra Club or unions or any of these people from dumping $10, $20, $30, $40 million into a campaign to flood out your voice. So in our campaigns, we can raise $50,000 or $100,000. If some outside individual wants to flood out the voice of all of our constituents and they want to drop a $1 million check, we can't stop them under the Supreme Court's opinion. But more importantly, in the federal races, where they're just not going to pass this disclosure law that we have here, they tried and there's not the support. Disclosure aside, you cannot stop the unlimited expenditure of money without a United States constitutional amendment. And so we can get all the disclosure we want, but we're still going to be drowned out. The constituents' voices are still going to be drowned out. It's some solace, but not a lot, that Representative Lynn could run for office, do his best job, knock on every single door twice, raise $100,000, and then somebody drops $1 million because they don't like the way he voted on some mining or oil or other issue. So that's the part that we can't touch unless there's a federal constitutional amendment. We can do all the disclosure in the world, but we can't stop the flow of money without the constitutional amendment.
Reverend Wilson?
I recognize that a lot of this advertising, someone feels is negative advertising, and I imagine it just depends on who it's about. There's a lot of when the media reports things, when the media, nationwide, maybe we should be getting after the media and saying that they just need to state facts instead of slanting things the way they do. I mean,
that's
we don't have any.
Yeah,
we don't have any control over that. But I haven't heard anybody trying to go after the media and trying to get them to do. That's free. doesn't cost a thing, but it happens all the time. And so, you know, I just think that this is the wrong way to go about doing what you want to do.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Well, I have a list here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple of questions. One is, you have rolled into this bill individuals that were not affected by Citizens United. Citizens United was a let for the first time in Alaska or federally corporations specifically make unlimited independent expenditures. We have had and sometimes I think we get mixed up on contributions, because we had limits on contributions to political campaigns, and those are still allowed, but the corporate and union independent expenditures seems to me the point of where we're going. And when we wrap into that, as you have in your resolution in the third whereas on the second page, individuals, it is problematic, because then you're talking about the free speech of persons. And, you know, I mean, corporations have basically the sole duty to make money, and so their expenditures are based on their duty to their shareholders, and which is quite different than the free speech of natural persons. So I'm concerned that in this resolution you have wrapped those two things together, although you may see money as being the problem. It seems the free speech and the proposed activities are where we should be going. And so I would ask that, have you looked at this and excluding the individuals and just focusing on the Citizens United case, which has caused the unlimited expenditures, which we never allowed in Alaska previously?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, you make a good point. Individuals, though they were allowed to make unlimited independent expenditures based on an earlier Supreme Court case, not Citizens United, were the committee to take out the word individuals because they felt individuals should be able to make unlimited independent expenditures. I'd be slightly disappointed. I understand your point. I think individuals are persons. Corporations and unions are not persons. You know, it's certainly at the pleasure of the committee what to do about that. I would just say that money is money, and when somebody dumps in $5 million, $10 million, $20 million into a campaign, they've made the voices of the rest of us so small, and it's not one person, one vote anymore. So I would be thrilled if we limited group and corporation contributions back to what they were before Citizens United. And so if you wanted to take out the word individuals, if that was the committee's will, I could live with that.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll be offering an amendment at some time if it's appropriate to accomplish that.
Okay. Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several points. I see we have 55 minutes, so I feel comfortable that I have time to get them all out.
We have until the middle of April.
Good. Excellent. Just a few things over the last half an hour, but most recently, representative to my immediate left talked about the media and why we can't get the media to properly, I guess, call out folks who are doing these sort of advertisements. And I just might remind the folks, you know, the media, for example, the Anchorage Daily News, is owned by a corporation. Corporations are basically answer to their shareholders. In fact, on their website, the responsibilities, the first sentence on McClatchy's website here underneath their...
Whose website?
The people who own the Anchorage Daily News. Okay. The corporation that owns the Anchorage Daily News. The fundamental role of the directors is to exercise their business judgment to be in the best interest of the company and their shareholders. They don't give a darn about what's correct, what's honest, or what's right, or what's not. They could care less. Bottom line for the media and corporations like that, sell papers. They don't care about the facts. They're not going to come out and say, hey, That advertisement that the AFL-CIO did is a lie. They're not going to do that. You know what they're going to do, Mr. Chairman? They're going to call, and they're going to say, why don't you take out an ad? Take out an ad and say it was a lie. And then the other side will say, well, that was a lie. And they'll say, why don't you take out an ad and say that the ad you took out calling you a liar, that they're liars. And all the while, the ADN rakes in cash, and that's all they care about. So don't for one second think that the media is unbiased. All they want to do is sell papers, and that's very obvious by the writing that goes on in this state and in this building, by the way. Anyway, if I may continue, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Thank you. You brought up the your discomfort with the ruling on Citizens United as being a Supreme Court decision that corporations are citizens. I think I
yes.
caught your drift that made you uncomfortable.
Well, persons.
Right, persons. I might remind the chairman that the Supreme Court also ruled on the case Roe v. Wade. Like it or not, that's the law. And I don't think you like that decision.
I do not.
Okay. So we just have to live with, and that's why I don't think this is, I don't necessarily agree with what's in here, but I don't think it's a futile exercise. I think it's a proper way.
I think Roe v. Wade said unborn are not persons.
Okay. But I don't think
this is the opposite.
I don't think this is an improper way to voice our opinion. I disagree with that. I think this is perfectly proper. I don't agree with it, but I think it's perfectly proper avenue. But I do have a couple questions for the sponsor. On the first whereas, page 1, lines 6 through 8, and on the second one, which is page 2, line 8 through 10, it talks about the influence, et cetera, et cetera. But it also says it harms the ability of the average citizens to have a voice. And then in the second whereas, page 2, line 10, it says distorts the ability of American citizens to have an equal voice in government. And I'd just like to have a little bit of an explanation from the sponsor, because I'm one person. I get one vote when I go in the ballot box, and I don't know how it dilutes my ability to vote as a single person with a single vote. I'd like to hear the sponsor talk about that.
Reverend Guerra.
Thank you. You know, my biggest concern is what this has done to Congress, what it's done to presidential elections. I have a lesser but some concern about what's done in Alaska. In Alaska, we're lucky that we have small districts. We can meet our constituents, and we can somehow try and beat back the influence of outside money. But we live under laws that are decided in Congress and by the president. And when all of my neighbors combined can't come up with the amount of money that one of these corporations or unions or individuals come up with, who then get the ear of congressmen during the campaign, which my constituents don't, they get a bigger voice. I mean, you dangle $1 million check, congressmen talk to you. After the election, they're very happy that you helped get them elected, and they listen to you. They're not knocking on my constituents' doors saying, hey, what do you think? So I think the concept of one person, one voice disappears when somebody's able to dump in $1 million, whether they're a corporation, a union, an environmental group, a very wealthy individual, and that's more than my whole district is able to contribute. So that's how I think it dilutes the concept of one person, one vote.
Mr. Chairman,
Johansson.
Thank you. And as an example, within Alaska, we've all, anybody who has a television set over the last 2.5, 3 years has been bombarded and inundated with ads about the Pebble Project, just one after the other after the other, and it's just on and on. I can't believe how much money is being spent. Is this the kind of influence that you're talking about, where every time I watch the news, there's three ads with some person who lives in Alaska somewhere, practically on the verge of tears, talking about how the entire culture is going to disappear if a project moves forward, and it's basically funded by one individual. And, I mean, is this the kind of stuff you're talking about that just bombards the average person? And you could probably go pick a person off the street and say, what do you think about Pebble? And they'd say, I don't know, every day for 3 years I've seen ads, and, you know, I guess it's bad. I mean, is that the kind of influence you're talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, there's certainly a huge amount of money on both sides on Pebble. And I would say that the folks on both sides believe passionately, but there's more money in the Pebble campaign than you and I could afford, for sure.
Of course, at this point, there is no bill to influence on Pebble.
And this bill wouldn't address the Pebble issue because this bill is limited to independent expenditures for or against a candidate. So if folks wanted to add...
These are private groups that have nothing to do whatsoever with the electoral process.
If folks wanted to add issue campaigns to this, I guess they could, but this just has to do with individual campaigns.
Mr. Chairman.
Continue.
Thank you. I brought that up because it may not be exactly fit underneath what you're talking about, but it's the kind of thing that you're talking about. It's bombardment of message with millions of dollars, which you just testified to, overwhelms the individual's perception or ability or whatever to retain that single individual perspective. It's how I interpreted your testimony. It's the overwhelming bombardment of money that waters down that individual vote. And that's why I use the Pebble Project, because it's something we're all familiar with. We're all bombarded every day by those advertisements. Mr. Chairman, if I could ask one more question at this point.
Go ahead. That's what committee hearing's for.
Thank you. I would like to put, you did mention in your testimony the millions of dollars that could be spent, and you specifically mentioned Exxon, you specifically mentioned environmentalists, and you named a couple people by name. Would groups like the AFL-CIO, NEA, those unions, is this the same type of group we're talking about? If we're talking about Exxon, are we talking about AFL-CIO? Are they the same entity in the eyes of the court?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, and this asks that we do the same thing to unions that we do to corporations, which is limit the amount of money that can be spent. Do unions spend as much as corporations? Probably not, but in some races, probably. In a particular race, probably yes. And it all goes back to the same thing. I don't care whether it's money that supports my cause or money that supports your cause. It distorts the political process when that kind of money gets dumped into the political system. And just one more time, since Citizens United, since we've allowed unions and corporations and these groups to make unlimited expenditures, it's jumped sevenfold from $37 million to $210 million in the 2010 election. That has an impact on people's votes.
Mr. Chairman, just one more. Thank you. And I agree. I'm glad that, obviously union is in almost everywhere, as and you mentioned it a couple times, but I wanted to make sure that it's not omitted, because if it is omitted, it certainly isn't going to be reported correctly. I can tell you that right now. But I would say that in the first whereas, which is, you could argue, is probably the most I don't want to say inflammatory, but it's the most direct whereas that's in the resolution. It does not have union. Every other whereas, and I think at some point during the process, if it gets to amendments, I'd like to add unions in there rather than organizations, or add it in addition to organizations, because I'd like to have, if we're going to have corporations in every whereas, we might as well put unions, because that's really the crux of the issue. And I just
question for the sponsor. The word, is this a locally developed resolution, or is this copied on a model resolution someplace?
No, unfortunately, we wrote it all by ourselves, Mr. Chair. So,
easy to change then.
But
so, would you consider an amendment to that effect?
Sure.
If we get that far,
through the chair, absolutely. We meant to cover unions when we said organizations, but you could certainly say unions and other organizations would be fine.
Okay, Representative Keller. Next will be Representative. Let me give you the order of procedure here. We're going to finish up with Reverend Johansson. Then we go Reverend Grunberg, Reverend Keller, Reverend Wilson, Reverend Seaton, and did you have your hand up?
Yeah, but you already gave my name. I'm after Johansson.
You're after Johansson. Okay. Any more?
Yes, I do have more, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. If we get there.
No, these are good questions.
In the second whereas, and I just noticed this, that's why I'm asking another question, it says, whereas the narrow 5-4 decision of the United States Supreme Court, and I think at some point I'd want to take the word narrow out, and I, my question, I guess, is how many 5-4 decisions have you agreed with? And again, back to Roe v. Wade, I believe that was 5-4 as well. So if we could take the descriptive word of narrow out, because it implies that it, you know, we're really close to flipping it, and I don't think we need to put that word in there, but that's just my opinion. I want to float it to the sponsor so it's not a surprise when we get to the amendment portion of the committee meeting, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we do have, just for committee's information, we have, either online or in person, I don't know which, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we have six or so people to testify either online or in the room. So I'd like to get to them too, you know, as soon as we can, matter of, you know, to help them out, because we get to work here, they come in to testify. Representative Grunberg.
Just very briefly, I wasn't going to say anything, but to respond to Representative Wilson's comments, and I'm not sure I really totally understood what you said, but I think the reason this is offered is because the basis of Citizens United was the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and the only way we can deal with that, at least under the current interpretation by the Supreme Court, is to amend the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We can't do anything else. Can't pass a federal law, can't pass a state constitutional amendment or anything. It would have to amend the Bill of Rights. Okay, I just wanted to be sure that that was understood. And with respect to the media enjoy broad personal, this is also to Representative Wilson, broad personal freedom as well. And, you know, I think it was Winston Churchill or Harry Truman who said, don't pick a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel. That's my only comments.
Okay. Representative Keller, I believe, is next.
Yeah, thank you. I think you said, Representative Guerra, that there is the increase has been from $37 million to $210. What about Alaska? Can you give us explicit examples in Alaska? What has changed since this happened, how it affected the last election cycle?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Keller, we looked for those numbers, and we just weren't able to compile them. I suppose we can go into the APOC website and try and – I'm not sure what's reported in the APOC website. We could try and add all of that stuff up. I've got to say my biggest concern is really the national political scene and these Congress folks that my constituents don't ever get listened to from, but that take in these huge checks in independent expenditures. They don't take them directly, but that money is spent to get them elected or unelected. But I don't have the Alaska numbers.
So – yeah, you're not saying, I mean, but as far as you can tell, there's no evidence of any effect on the Alaska elections.
Through the chair, I believe there is. In the last election, though I didn't have a particularly big campaign, I did see independent expenditures in flyers, and I thought it was, in my view, there were more from both sides.
There were what?
There were more, in my personal view, from what I saw. And I have to say, it's harder to run a negative campaign when your face and your name is on the flyer, when it's Bob Lynn or Wes Keller or Les Guerra. We don't really like running negative campaigns. But when it's somebody who's unassociated with us, they have no gumption not to run negative campaigns, and that's why so many of the independent expenditures are so negative.
Just Reverend Keller?
A quick follow-up on that. I seem to remember the same thing. I remember seeing a couple flyers, and what I did when I got them is I looked right at the bottom, paid for by, and to me that disclosure covers it all. It tells me volumes, and I just can't imagine, for what it's worth, limiting that and choosing to limit it.
Of course, sometimes the disclosure is paid for by, and folks who love puppies or something. I mean, you have no idea. Some name that means nothing.
That's a good point, Mr. Chair. In fact, it's kind of interesting. There, we tend to characterize the big corporations here as Walmart and, you know, the real biggies. In reality, there's 6 million corporations out there, and that's why I'm frankly concerned here, because you're saying those, you know, all those corporations, which are associations of persons, you know, can no longer, you know, have freedom of speech. So, anyway, that's a comment, not a question. I'm sorry, but
that's fine. I believe Representative Wilson.
Thank you, and I do want to comment that I should have said amend the Constitution. So when I was making that statement. But I still want to follow up, and I think it was misunderstood what I said as far as newspapers may be a corporation, but why would they spend a bunch of money when they can just do what they're doing now, which is they wouldn't have to spend any money at all, and they could still slant things. You know, and so it doesn't make sense to me that we're approaching this situation, we're acting like the amend the Constitution is the only option, and there are lots of other ways that we could make those changes. And so I'm concerned about the way that we're going about it.
It's all interesting to me. A newspaper can put out an article on whatever, particularly political, and be totally accurate on what they say. But the slant is so bad. It'd be accurate, but slanted. It's amazing how well they can do this. Did any follow-up?
No.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed in the title we have it supporting or opposing candidates for public office, and in the second whereas we have that. But in the resolve, on page 2, line 14.
Page 2, line 14.
We are just saying independent expenditures. And I believe that the sponsor said that actually what this is supposed to be doing is talking about expenditures supporting or opposing political candidates for office, not broad topics or other expenditures in the public arena. And I think that the resolve does not cover that. So are you acceptable to adding the words from the second whereas supporting or opposing a candidate for public office in the be it resolved?
Through the chair, I personally believe that's what independent expenditures means, but you could certainly add that, and I'd have no problem with it.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, because I think we talked about independent expenditures for things like the Pebble, other issues, and we want to make sure that we are not asking for something beyond a political campaign, not only a political campaign, this is for supporting or opposing a candidate. So at the appropriate time, if we get to amendments, I'll offer.
Okay. Going to Representative Grunberg, and then I'd like to get to some of the folks who'd like to testify before we get much further. Representative Grunberg and then Wilson. Or did you have more?
I do.
Yes, please. Please continue. I'm sorry.
Which one of us?
Representative Wilson. Oh,
okay, thank you.
It's Valentine's Day.
That's fine.
I do have two things that I want to bring up. I went through the resolution, and every time that the word corporation is mentioned, the word union is mentioned also in this whole resolution, so we don't have to worry about that.
So it's even Stephen.
Yes, it's Stephen. Oh, except for number one, yeah. And then also, but I think that in whereas number one, where it says that what they're doing by allowing them to have as many contributions as they want, it harms the ability of the average citizen to have a voice in their own government. And I really take offense at that, and that is saying that the average citizen isn't smart enough to read between the lines in a lot of this. And, you know, I don't think that's very good to have in there, because the average citizen should, or at least most of us, are smart enough to realize what's going on, or at least to make up our own decision. I think the average citizen does have a voice in their own government, and what they're doing isn't changing that.
Through the chair.
Representative Garrett.
The only reason that people take out political ads, and the only reason people try and flood the airwaves with political ads, is because they work. They influence elections. They change elections. And most people, for better or for worse, don't have the time that we have to look at every word of a bill. And a lot of people get influenced by these TV ads. The people wouldn't spend money on them if they didn't. And the TV ads are done very professionally in ways that will sway votes and tug at emotions. I don't think that's saying anything bad about individual citizens. It's just most individual citizens don't have time to go into the congressional record to research somebody's real votes. And so the information they get is on TV and as you say, in the media. And I've got to say there are lots of media outlets that I'm not so thrilled with myself. I just didn't want to regulate the media myself. I thought that would bring on more trouble than anything.
It is, you know, if you had the money. It is, you know, I'm sorry to say, a lot of folks, you know, will vote for the last sign you see on the way to the ballot box, the last piece of pretty mail they get in the mailbox, the last, you know, listening to the radio on the way to the polling place, the last ad to hear is who they vote for or against. That's political reality. But all my constituents, of course, are much more intelligent than that.
I think Representative Wilson still has work with.
Representative Wilson.
The case that we're talking about is less than 2 years old, and I don't think that we really can tell the difference of what's been happening because of the fact that since the 90s there has been increase in contributions to campaigns for whatever reason. And also, we can't. I think that the Congress is still looking at this, still debating this. They haven't made a decision one way or another, and I think it's too soon for us to be able to make statements that it's the direct result of that.
Of course, at this point, if the court has made a decision, it doesn't matter what Congress does at this point, yes. Except for a potential amendment. Well, I'm getting notes all around here. Just a second here. Representative Grunberg, are you through?
Yes.
Well, you can come back. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Guerra. Representative Seaton asked about was exactly the opposite of what you and I talked about. And my concern...
Bring the mic closer.
I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. My concern is... that the resolved clause is not limited to candidate elections, but it can include candidate and issue elections, and I'm going to use a pebble mine as it. That's an issue election.
Issue, but not on the ballot any place.
No, but potentially it's an issue election, or any of the stuff we've had as initiatives is basically that. And it seems to me that it's a slippery slope, both legally and philosophically. If you put limits on whether Les Guerra can get elected, but no limits on whether Pebble Mine is permitted, I'm just using that because that happens to be something that we've talked about. There, in my mind, there's not a lot of difference because whether Pebble Mine is approved may depend upon whether Guerra is elected and all sorts of things. You know, they're all intertwined. It's a seamless web. And I find it very difficult to advocate for limiting one without limiting the other, without, as Justice Connor said in a case, quoting Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass, requiring the language to do a linguistic cakewalk.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerin.
Both the introduction that you're talking about and the last clause that Representative Seaton are talking about refer to independent expenditures. One says independent expenditures to defeat or elect a candidate. One just says independent expenditures. The term independent expenditures, and I wasn't clear about this before, just refers to electing or defeating a candidate. That's what independent expenditures under the law are. So when you say independent expenditures, you're talking about money used by an outside group to help elect or defeat a candidate. Your issue, which is, should we also regulate this area of issue campaigns? If somebody wants to add that into the bill, I guess it doesn't cause me a lot of heartache. That's not what Citizens United was about. Representative Seaton was right about that. But I would say to Representative Seaton's question, by talking about independent expenditures, we're just talking about money spent by outside groups to elect or unelect a candidate. That's the term of art. That's what it means. I'm happy with the amendments that – I mean, all of the amendments the folks on the committee have offered, I could live with. So have at it. But
may I follow up?
Yes, but then I want to get a quick follow-up.
I understand.
Help the folks who are trying to testify.
Yeah, if that's the case, I don't think most people who read the term independent expenditures, who are not expert in this area of the law, would know that it was limited like that. I would say if it's going to be used that way in this resolution, we should have a modifier phrase to refer to political candidate races. Otherwise, it will be misinterpreted like I misinterpreted it.
Thank you.
Consider that potential amendment. Let's go to folks who've signed up to testify. We can all come back, but it's harder for folks online and so on. Scott Eric Shaw and Soldana, are you online or here?
Yes.
Are you there?
Can you hear us?
Yes. Scott Shaw?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
My name is Scott Shaw. I live in Soldana, Alaska.
And are you speaking for yourself or you represent a group?
I'm speaking for myself.
Go ahead, sir.
What we have now basically amounts to bribery. H.J. 33 is a step toward ridding our elections of corruption, the corruption that currently pollutes our democracy. It's very clear to me that corporations are intangible entities, not persons. Money is not speech, it's property. These would be very clear issues to a child. And the reason we need to go through this step is because this is what the Supreme Court has recommended that we do to amend the First Amendment. That's why we're taking this step. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Sure. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. You mentioned in your testimony, sir, that corporations, you feel the same way about unions or environmental groups, or is this just your testimony pointed directly at corporations?
Yes, sir. I agree that it applies to corporations, unions, any kind of special interest group.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Thank you for your testimony, sir. We have Patrick Carvisto. Are you there, sir? Yes, sir. Are you testifying for yourself or do you represent a group?
I'll be testifying for myself.
Best kind of people. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, especially here, even though a national scene of corruption is still on here in Alaska, I think it's especially important to Alaska because the population is so low in comparison to corporations coming in here exporting goods. This bill would be a very good thing for Alaska to protect the voices of the individual here in Alaska. And the influence towards media does have a massive effect on people's votes because, as somebody was saying before, not a lot of people have time to take up issues as I am today. And just a quick example is I'm an Athabascan from here in Alaska, and ESN endorsed Lees and Murkowski when Joe Miller and Murkowski and Scott McAdams were running, and because AFN endorsed Murkowski, basically every Native in Alaska voted for Murkowski. And I wasn't too happy with that. And I'd just like to add that taking individuals out of this bill is an attempt at undermining the resolution. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it. Up in Anchorage, we have Robin Louster.
Yes.
Please identify yourself.
Am I still on?
Yes.
I'm part of a group called Move to Amend Anchorage, and I'm speaking on group's behalf.
What's the name of the group again?
Move to Amend Anchorage.
Yeah. I still didn't get that. Somebody help me.
Statistics. Since the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, the volume of ads paid for by outside groups has increased by over 1,600%. The spending on those ads by outside groups has increased by nearly 1,300%. I find this stunning. Super PACs, corporations, unions, and individuals with nearly unlimited funds, all of these entities spending money on elections skew the results and undermine our democracy. This is going to affect all parties. This is not a liberal or conservative issue. It's about a fair election system. It's already seriously affecting the Republican primary with an avalanche of negative, not necessarily truthful ads. Without a reversal of the Citizens United ruling, we cannot pass laws regulating our elections to correct these injustices. Corporations, furthermore, by law, are required to put their bottom line first. And this means they do not necessarily consider the public good, and very probably do not consider the public good. Currently, unions have less power and money than corporations, but I would not be any happier having them spend unlimited funds on elections, nor nonprofits. I was brought up to believe in government of the people, by the people, and for the people. The current situation of corporate personhood, granted by the courts, has positioned these government-created entities to have greater power than the sovereign citizens of the U.S. It has been proposed that a constitutional amendment to null the Citizens United decision is necessary. Move to Amend Anchorage supports House Joint Resolution 33. We urge you to move it out of committee with a recommendation to pass it. I also brought a letter in support of HJR 33 signed by 12 of our members. And thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you hanging in there while we cuss and discuss here at the committee. Robert Burrell in Anchorage, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, someone must have misspelled the name. My name is Robert Book.
Oh, Representative Book, is that you?
Former representative, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, former colleagues, thanks for the opportunity to speak. Basically, I'm here as an advocate for this resolution, and I would like to speak to a couple of the points that were made through the previous discussion. The original insidious nature of this culmination of Citizens United started in the 1800s. And what began then ended with corporations being determined to be protected by the First Amendment.
Answer the phone.
Kill the phone. Well, I apologize. Anyway, you got to us a little quicker than I thought.
Yeah, that's one of these. So that's one of these groups calling into you.
Corporations were protected by the First Amendment. That's the first part that happened, and the second part that happened was that independent expenditures were now protected by the First Amendment and considered free speech. So money is now equated to free speech. Those are the two issues that really have changed things in the last couple of years. Now, to get to Representative Wilson's, P. Wilson's issue about other methods. There are other methods, and some states like Montana and even Alaska, we're looking at different ways of addressing this issue. However, this is a Supreme Court issue, and in order for public awareness, it should be handled in the same manner as it was addressed in the first place. So by way of public information, I think that this tool of HJR 33 is appropriate. And to get to Representative Johansson's manner by which we use resolutions, I noticed that a couple of weeks ago, Central Park was brought up as an issue, and a very controversial one at that. So these are means by which we can get public attention, we can get public knowledge, and we can educate the public as to what kinds of influences are going on. In a book that was titled The Road to the White House 2012, the author stated 94% of those with the most money were elected to the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress. 94%. So if money is the determiner for getting into office, well, we're nearly there. If that's what you think you want to see is that only those with money are going to be elected to office, then all of us are subject to what that money is going to lead and where it's going to go. We're currently there. That's status quo. If that is what this country and our leaders are promoting, I can tell you there's a great many people out there that are dissatisfied. They're angry, they're frustrated, and they want to see change that benefits them. Corporations are not people. They don't have feelings. They have been given an unlimited way to influence elections, and it's working. You can see that, as was mentioned by my colleague Robin. Right now, we have a couple people out there with money that are supporting their particular candidates. Mitt Romney has one. Rick Santorum has one. And the most recent occurrence was when the multimillionaire provided three states of victory for Rick Santorum and vaulted him back into the public's forefront. So you can see the results of what happened in 2012 in especially the Republican the Republican primaries currently. This is not going to be one-sided. Both of the parties are going to be taking advantage of this, and the people in the middle, those in the middle class, are being crushed. There is a site, and I would like to refer to one other point. Now, the discussions have been brought up between unions and business. There's a website. It's opensecrets.org, and if you go to that website, there's figures. The political contributions in 2010 for corporations were $1,317,977,729. Labor, unions, less than 10% of that at $92,355,686. Yes, unions have the same ability. They do not have the same availability of cash. They can't even come close, not even one-tenth. So they're not to be discounted. They are thrown in the mix. But do they have an influence? Not nearly what corporations do. And there should be no mistake in that. Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate once again to testify in front of this fine committee.
Thank you, Representative Book. Are you part of the group moved to amend Anchorage?
By golly, I am.
Okay. By golly, I guess that means yes. Okay. Representative Keller.
Hello, Bob. Well, I wanted to say hi. Good to hear you again. I haven't seen you since you were down here. You characterized the decision as causing an unlimited influence. And I believe that's an overstatement. I'd like to get your response. The reason I believe it's an overstatement is that you can only say it's unlimited if you presume that voters are too dumb to be able to follow the money because there's disclosure laws in place.
what have you, that continue to be there. And I know that this was reported in the press, you know, by a number of people as being, you know, allowing unlimited influence by corporations and that. But I think that's really an overstatement, and I just was wondering if what you thought about that.
I appreciate the question, Wes, and thank you for your inquiry. I'd like to echo Representative Johansson's words, and I would like to once again emphasize to Representative Wilson, if you only have one view, if it is so one-sided in conversation, if that is the only knowledge that's put out there, what is the public expected to learn? Yes. That is exactly what is happening in many cases. You cited one local example. Well, there's money being thrown at both sides, so it is a very contentious situation that is basically driven from two different perspectives. That is not the case in many of these instances on other state and federal issues. Now, the other thing, this affects not just federal and state elections, it affects local elections. You may not have seen the effects yet. You have seen the effects in the state and in federal elections since 2010, but this is going to be a major component in even local elections if it continues.
I did a newsletter after this decision came down, and the headline of the newsletter was United States was a political earthquake. And I saw there's a hand over here, Representative Keller.
Johansson.
Oh, Representative, you both start with a K here. Johansson.
Thank you. Representative Book, good to hear you back in the debate. Can't say I miss your floor speeches, but can you answer who, you mentioned opensecrets.org, who funds their operations? Do you know?
You'd have to do the research on that, Representative Keller. And are you referring to my Woman's Day speech? No, I think you're just jealous there.
And then just something for conversation. You mentioned the one person backing Gingrich and the one person backing Santorum. Don't you think the fact that that's common knowledge across the country shows that the disclosure and people understand, and the other candidates, I'm sure that Romney has certainly made it quite clear that the other candidates are being funded by one person. Don't you think that disclosure should be good enough for the Americans? I have a lot of faith, like Representative Keller, that the American voters is pretty darn smart, and that's why one of my questions to the sponsor would be to define what an average citizen is. I'm not quite sure what that is, but what are your thoughts on the fact that we know that there's one person funding these two people? It's just out there.
Well, it isn't, I guess, in particular, the mechanism by which some of this advertising is funded is basically that there's no veracity, there's no truth, there's no measure of what that advertising represents. So they're not held to any standards whatsoever. And, you know, if you're only given one line of information, then you're assuming that's true. And in many cases, it is distorted, it is manipulated, and it doesn't give a true representation of what the facts are. So the public may or may not know that, but still they're influenced by it. And that's the point. The point isn't who, it's what and how.
Okay. And Representative Johan, I have a couple of folks in the audience that would like to testify, and we're drawing near the end of the committee meeting. I want to make sure I get to them. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Just one quick final question. You mentioned that some of these ads describing the issues or the people are distorted, manipulated, and not a true representation. So if that's the case, would another corporation, like a news corporation that distorts the facts, manipulates the story, and is not a true representation, people read the newspapers, so if that's where they're getting their facts from, then couldn't you argue that the corporation that owns the newspaper is just as guilty as distorting, manipulating, and not truly representing the facts of the issue on a person or an issue?
I don't discriminate between one corporation and another.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. To the audience here, but we have a Christina Mounts. Are you here? Thank you for your patience. Good morning.
Morning.
Identify yourself and are you with this group here?
My name is Christina Mounts, last name M-O-U-N-C-E, and I'm here today to represent Juneau's chapter of Move to Amend. Move to Amend has chapters all around the state in Anchorage, Kenai, Juneau, Prince of Wales, and Sitka, as well as chapters around the nation. Move to Amend's mission is to amend the U.S. Constitution to limit the amount corporations can spend in our elections. Right now, we live in a political climate where we are bombarded by endless commercials and advertisements, either supporting one candidate or smearing another. After the Citizens United decision, nearly $4 billion was spent during the 2010 congressional election, completely eclipsing the previous figure of $1 billion that was spent prior to Citizens United decision. And according to the Center for Responsive Politics, in the congressional races of 2010, the candidate who spent the most money won 85% of the House seats and 83% of the Senate. Citizens United has given the politicians with the most corporate support an upper hand in our elections. The U.S. government was designed to be of the people, for the people, and by the people. And the election process is a fundamental for achieving that goal. Not only can anyone vote, but anyone can run for office. But right now, the playing field is not even. Anyone can run, but without finance, campaign finance limitations, not everyone has an equal opportunity to win. By allowing unlimited campaign contributions, the political system has essentially been rigged against hardworking Americans who can't afford to compete with for-profit corporations, unions, special interest groups, and wealthy individuals. By passing this resolution, Alaska will be asserting itself as a state whose representatives support fair campaigns and are dedicated to faithfully representing the average American.
I did have, on the group, Move to Amend Anchorage, who's the head of this group? Do you have a president or secretary?
There's no leaders.
Or you just meet on a street corner? What?
In Juneau, we meet at the library. We put out information in the Capital City.
Wait a minute. Who's the organizers of this group?
I organized here in Juneau.
Okay.
But we don't have
the same name
leaders.
As the one in Anchorage. This is okay. I know. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's the head of the organization?
Nobody is. Organizations.
It's like the Tea Party, in other words.
I guess kind of, yeah. Except we don't have any affiliations. See, our members, I mean, they don't agree on Pebble Mine or environmental issues or union rights issues. But we all agree on this one thing.
Okay. I just curious because several people testified, and that's fine. I'm going to, we only have a few moments here. I'm going to go, I know we had another person in the audience who'd like to testify, I think. Also, I want to get a person on the phone, Patrice Lee in Fairbanks. Are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yes.
Please give your name and affiliation, if any.
Yes, I am.
Please
give me
Who's talking?
Please. Yes, I am.
Hello. Just give your name and who you represent, if anybody.
Fairbanks, Alaska. And I'm representing myself.
Okay. Continue. Whoever this is in the background, please drop off and let the...
it's an echo.
It's a time delay.
It's an echo, okay. Well, the echo can drop off, too.
Amending the Constitution to limit corporations, unions, and other large groups from being able to spend endlessly. My voice can't compete. I don't have endless money to donate. And I don't believe that corporations and other large groups have personhood. They don't birth babies. They don't care for their sick and elderly parents. They don't shop in the grocery store, try to make ends meet.
maybe the company. Okay, I beg your pardon. Go ahead.
I'd like to see you go ahead and not be bogged down in details such as what is the average citizen and how much influence media has or doesn't have. We know it has a tremendous, tremendous amount, as has been stated, for those ads to be used. The endless amount of money that's being spent could be put to so much better use. Instead of being, you know, wasted on TAC ads, schools could use it, hospitals could use it, and I'd just like to see us get back to something that makes more sense. Thank you for your work in the legislature and for listening to me.
Thank you very much for calling in. We have one more here from on my list. We have Larry Hurtock.
Hurlock,
I beg your pardon. Thank you for your patience there.
Thank you.
It says Hurlock Trust. Is that your company?
The Hurlock Family Trust. There's
okay. The
trust.
So you're speaking for yourself?
I'm trustee for the trust. And I vote, on average, 365 corporate ballots a year for the trust. My father invested in a lot of small things.
Yeah, I wish you were in my district.
I'm here to support the resolution. And the reason is I think there's harm done to the investor in his role as a citizen. And I expect our investments, the people we invest in, to spend their time on production, promotion, and distribution, not to act as our proxy on matters of governmental sovereignty. And this is especially so because modern corporations are captive of management due to dilution of the ownership of corporate stock and shares. One of the things that bothers me especially is that large entities, bureaucracies, are able to hide expenditures from their shareholders. And I'm going to use the example of one share that we have, which is Archer Daniel Midland's. These are the people that bring you ethanol, you know, competes with Alaska Oil. So I'd like to know, you know, exactly what they spend their money on. However, when I turn to, and I like to say that the Supreme Court, of course, you know, says let's have disclosure. I have before me a document that says U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is the author of the 5-4 majority decision in Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission, stated that if given prompt disclosure of political expenditures, quote, shareholders can determine whether the corporation's political speech advances the corporation's interest in making profits. Let's examine Archer Daniel Midland and talk about disclosure. There was two different shareholder proposals for Archer Daniel Midland's, and of the ballots I've looked at, I've seen about 50 different ones in the corporations I've looked at. And Archer Daniel Midland's, I won't read the shareholders.
Because we're actually at the end of our hearing, but so if you can compress
okay,
it.
I'll wrap up then. The shareholder proposal was about disclosure, and Archer Daniel Midland in their the board says in their proxy against the resolution, in addition to the disclosures mandated by law, ADM voluntarily reports the aggregate amounts of ADM's contributions to political parties and candidates. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hide disclosure, you aggregate it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you hide it in plain view is what's going on. The average person doesn't know what their company spends on anything. I went to their website, which said you can find the aggregate disclosure. I spent 15 minutes. I'm real competent with a computer in front of me, and I couldn't find it. I find this very objectionable in my role as a citizen investor. And in final conclusion, in the other shareholder proposal that Archer Daniel Lynn's management was against, they summarized by saying the information is publicly available. Nonsense. Yeah. They're telling me to go elsewhere to find my information. That concludes my testimony, and I hope you vote in favor of the resolution.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And we are going to be, we're out of time for the hearing this morning. I intend to bring this bill back before the committee the earliest opportunity. Thank you for presenting it. Thank you for the very good questions we got and comments we got from the committee. I want to give the schedule, but Representative Johansson, and then we have to conclude.
Sure.
And Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, because there was question, Move to Amend is a nationwide group that is very narrowly focused on making the point that corporations can make unlimited expenditures. They don't, at least on their website, talk about any of the other part of the ruling by the Supreme Court. Very focused on the corporation side. In fact, on their homepage, they have pictures of Enron and Blackwater and the most egregious corporations that you could publicly get your.
I would invite the committee, and I will myself.
So you know,
go look at it. What, do you have the website? I assume.
Move to
type in and search.
Move to Amend. You can find it. It's pretty easy. But just for so the committee knows.
Yes, because I'd never heard of it before. Representative Grunberg, we have to conclude.
This last gentleman who spoke, we don't have any time to ask him questions. And
he's a local from Juneau.
When we take the bill up again, if he would be able to come back, he has hit the nail on the head. Proxies that you get from the corporations you may own stock, it's impossible now to even find out what those issues are. And the shareholders have very little right to present their proposals, and it's almost always voted down. And if that gentleman can come back, I have been enraged for years over this, and I don't know if, Mr. Chair, if you give him a couple of minutes so I can ask him a few questions.
Not now.
No. But when he comes back, this is absolutely
outrageous. Well, I will continue. When you hear this bill again, I will continue entertaining public testimony.
And I don't often say that.
With that, I'd like to thank all those who testified, both here and online. Our next scheduled meeting is on Thursday, February 16th. We'll be hearing SB 89, Legislative Ethics Act, as pending referral, and HB 254, Alaska Native Language Council. With that, thank you to the committee, and we are adjourned.
Thanks, Les. Thanks.